Good morning. This is Stuart Bunnell from the Shone FM Newsroom, and this is the latest interview in our 2025 territorial election series, where we'll be speaking with party leaders and Indigenous candidates from each of the three parties. Today, we're speaking with Cynthia James, a Carcross Tagish First Nation citizen and the Yukon Liberal Party candidate for Southern Lakes. She's the Director of First Nation Partnerships at the Yukon Development Corporation for the proposed Yukon-BC Grid Connect project and a small business owner with no shortage of experience. And she joins me today. Cynthia, thank you so much for joining me.
Good morning, Stuart. Thank you.
Now, what drove you to run with the Liberal Party?
I have been working hard and I've thought of politics. I ran for chief for Carcross Tagish First Nation in 2019. It's kind of just been a part of my life and an interest in my life. I appreciate showing up for community. I love creating strategic planning. I just want to solve problems and I root in with the Liberal Party in a value system. So that was my decision.
Fantastic. Now, in last week's announcement of the Yukon Liberal Party platform, you mentioned the Department for Yukon First Nations Relations, which was your idea for the platform.
Yes.
I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about what that department would look like and how it would work.
Yeah. So a standalone department for First Nation relations or self-governing relations, creating a dedicated body that lives outside of the current executive council office, mirroring the Women and Gender and Equity Department and that implements MMIWG 2S+ and has a direct minister.
Now, at that announcement, you raised a concern that we haven't heard a lot about during this election coverage. You brought up the opioid crisis. Now, we've heard about reducing barriers to substance use treatment. We've talked about getting more outreach workers in and around the Whitehorse Emergency Shelter at 405 Alexander. But we haven't heard a whole lot else. So what kind of solutions need to be considered to address the opioid crisis?
I think when we look at from a 30,000 foot perspective, if we want economic development in the Yukon, if we want to plan for economic development in the Yukon, we have to build capacity and we need our own workforce. And the opioid crisis adds a risk to all of that, including Arctic security. If we don't have healthy communities, then we're vulnerable. And we are vulnerable because there are Yukon First Nation communities and communities experiencing the opioid crisis. I feel like we're in a bit of a freeze because we don't know what to do because it's happening so fast. I can only speak for myself, but the rapid impacts are ongoing and we kind of just brace ourselves for, you know, what is to come or what could happen or what could occur. And that is not a very safe place to live in and consistent fear and survival. I think that we have to really sink in and plan for how this could look and really treat it in a way that we would treat any project and with in healthcare in our approach to mental health, in our approach to, you know, this is an impact as well of the impacts of intergenerational trauma, of which, you know, I'm a residential school survivor. I grew up on the site of the residential school in Carcross. So I know very much about how the impacts, but I want to focus on where we could go with what that could look like in healing and collective. So thank you.
Yeah. And of course, one of the ongoing themes of this election has been that solving any number of problems comes down to addressing other problems. For instance, you know, having more housing will help make things more affordable. So what role would the other big ticket items for the election, like housing, affordability, what role would those play in addressing the opioid crisis?
Having a safe place to stay, becoming homeless, it takes a little bit of time, but it can happen overnight as well. I think that the high cost of living is impactful. I think that, you know, the capacity issues that we have in our communities, our First Nation communities and our Yukon communities, that's being impacted. So it just puts a strain when you have this type of emergency on every other emergency. We have a housing crisis, we have the opioid crisis, you know, we may or may not, we have issues with our aging infrastructure for energy. So I think all of this plays into where we need to go and how we need to get there. And I don't think it's just focusing on one aspect for sure. However, but like it's all incumbent of, and we need to focus on having healthy communities and what that could look like. And what do we want the Yukon to look like in 20 years? Not just every 4 years when a new government comes in. I think succession planning is especially important in the impacts of climate change. We, you know, look at what Alaska is going through right now. That's just right next door. You know, emergency preparedness can be implanted into all of these avenues and not just focused on housing. Like emergency preparedness needs to be planned around housing. It needs to be planned around the healthcare. It needs to be planned around all aspects of what we're working on.
The platform does have a good number of commitments regarding partnerships and reconciliation, including expanding the role of Yukon government community advisors to include all First Nations and recognizing First Nations language teachers under the Education Act. What does it mean to you to see so many commitments to reconciliation in your party's platform?
I feel like it's time. It's time. Reconciliation is action, and it's creating it's lowering barriers and bolstering languages, bolstering culture, bolstering spaces in economic reconciliation and at tables that perhaps we were shut out of. I think that, stop. Can you repeat that?
Excuse me. What does it mean to you to see so many commitments to reconciliation in your party's platform?
Reconciliation in action is making sure that we are working together to nation to nation, because you can't define reconciliation. A nation has to do that for themselves. And that's the whole aspect of meeting self-government in the middle. And it's also about building relationships and intergovernmentally as well. I think that's important. I'm happy that our party is taking reconciliation, and especially the language teachers. My grandmother was a language teacher, Lucy Wren, Gochkla, which the Carcross School is named after her. She taught me Tlingit for 7 years, and then my cousin Marlene Smith, she was her assistant and taught us as well. And I think that language is so important. We have many languages in the Yukon, and they deserve to have the teachers that are recognized under that act. There's also a pay increase that we could look at for our teachers, because language teachers are teachers. They're Yukon teachers. They're in the schools. They have important roles. And they're also great reconciliation teachers within the greater part of a school, because every student who attends that class is going to learn about the people and the First Peoples.
Yeah, I have noticed that it's very difficult to learn a language without learning the culture behind it as well. We are running out of time here, so just one more question for you. What can First Nations and Indigenous voters expect from you should you make it to the Legislative Assembly?
I believe that if I make it there, if I'm blessed to make it there, I will be, I'm a team player. I can work with any groups. I have especially learned that and committed that with my team at YDC. I think that we have many different heavy lifts that have to be, we can't get there without working together. So that's where I live. I live in working together and making sure that the rural communities, not just my own community, but the rural communities are represented in this journey.
Fantastic. I'm afraid that we are out of time today. Cynthia James, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Stuart.